let me introduce us. I'm Robert Wright of Blogging Heads TV. You are Esam Ahmed, a Pakistani journalist. You're in Pakistan right now. You're in Lahore. Mm-hmm. And I'm very glad to have you because I think there's some things that a lot of Americans are confused about regarding the U.S. Pakistani relationship, which just has its kind of seemingly weird elements. In fact, I suspect that a lot of Pakistanis would agree with Americans that it's kind of a weird relationship and might just disagree on what's weird about it. I mean, from an American point of view, mm-hmm. what seems strange is that the Pakistani government, or at least elements within it, are said to support elements that kill Americans in Afghanistan, elements of the Taliban, allies of the Taliban, and in general thwart American aims in Afghanistan. And it seems kind of weird for your ally, you know, we've given a lot of support to Pakistan, for your ally to be aiding your enemy. That seems strange. Meanwhile, I think that a lot of Pakistanis find something strange about the relationship. I saw a headline just a couple of days ago in the Telegraph. It says, refers to a cricket star, a former cricket star named Imran Khan.
Yep.
It says, Imran Khan leads 100,000 rally against Pakistan's U.S. alliance. It says, cricket legend and opposition politician Imran Khan railed yep. against the government and its alliance mm. with the U.S. before more than 100,000 flag-waving supporters, mm. establishing himself as a force in Pakistani politics. So there's discontent with the relationship on both sides. And I wanted to start by asking you, what do you think it motivates some of those 100,000 people who are demonstrating against the U.S. Pakistani alliance? What is it that bothers them about the relationship?
Well, for a start, I mean, you have to go back and look a little bit historically. The U.S. Has traditionally been a kind of fair-weather friend to Pakistan. It's sort of been there when the U.S. has found that its interests require it to be there. For example, during the 1980s, when the U.S. helped create the Taliban and backed people like Osama bin Laden. But at later times...
This was when we were fighting the Soviets by proxy.
Exactly.
In Afghanistan.
Exactly. Right. But that relationship, after the Soviet Union dissolved, that relationship with Pakistan was terminated, and Pakistan was sort of left out in the cold throughout mm-hmm. the 1990s. And so there's that kind of lingering memory of that, whereas, you know, the other allies of Pakistan, for example, China, has been with Pakistan in terms of economic assistance and military assistance throughout its existence. Another thing which a lot of Pakistanis point to is that the levels of terrorism in their own country, which have spiked since 9/11, it's now, I mean, it's cities which were once considered safe, you know, from terrorism, like Lahore, where I currently am. It's an eastern city. It's the culture capital of Pakistan. Now, almost routinely face suicide bombs and rising levels of terrorist violence, which have led to some 35,000 Pakistanis dying since 9/11.
And wow. And when you say since 9/11, was the precipitating event more 9/11 or the invasion of Afghanistan by the United States? I mean, what caused the
right.
surge in terrorism?
So exactly, that would be the invasion of Afghanistan, which enraged Islamists, militants against both United States and against the Pakistani mm-hmm. establishment for supporting America. And you've got to remember, you know, we talk about Pakistan undermining the U.S. aims in Afghanistan, and to an extent that's correct, but to perhaps a greater extent, I mean, throughout the 2000s, Pakistan's consistently been procuring high-level al-Qaeda commanders and leaders and helping the U.S. With intelligence sharing and sharing the location of high-value targets for drone strikes. So these actions have led to Pakistani cities and the Pakistani heartland coming under attack from those very terrorists, same terrorists. Now, it's a little bit more complicated than just that, because Pakistan itself has been complicit in training these terrorists. And it's sort of, Pakistan used these militants in the 80s for their own purposes to accomplish what the military calls strategic depth. And by that I mean the military establishment of this country, who, I mean, are basically in charge of this country, even though we normally have a civilian government. It's the military government which calls the shots. They run something like 60% of the budget off the books. They run everything from property to agriculture, and according to some reports, own up to 12% of the landmass of the country. So they propped up these militants to further their strategic goals in Afghanistan, because they considered Afghanistan to be another province of Pakistan, almost like our own backyard, and to avoid encirclement, because Pakistan's traditional enemy is India, so they wanted to avoid that encirclement, and they wanted to train militants in Kashmir as well to fight the Indians there, because Kashmir is a disputed territory between India and Pakistan.
Right. Now, can I pause there and read you something I read in the New York Times and see if you agree with it? And it pertains to exactly this. It says, Pakistan's biggest nightmare is a strong, centralized, nationalist Afghan state, just the kind the Americans have been striving to create. Such an Afghanistan, Pakistani leaders fear, will lay claim to the Pashtun areas that straddle a border that was drawn carelessly by the British, and that Afghanistan has never fully accepted. They also fear that the Pashtuns might someday want a nation of their own. So they're emphasizing a second issue aside from Indian influence in Afghanistan. But they are saying that in a fundamental sense, Pakistanis' aims are at odds with American aims in Afghanistan. Okay, so first of all, would you agree that there really is a pretty basic tension between our aims, America's aims, and Pakistan's aims? A And B, there are really both of these elements. I mean, there is the fear of Indian influence in Afghanistan, which I might analogize to, say, America's fear of Soviet influence during the Cold War.
Yeah.
And then separately from that, there is this ethnic group, the Pashtuns, that straddle the two borders, and Pakistan fears unrest there. Is that a fair characterization?
I would say that the characterization in that article is a little bit overblown. I think both countries have there is an alignment of interests in certain areas. That's why there is a relationship. If there was no alignment of interests, there would not be a relationship. Both countries have a stake in a peaceful Afghanistan. A peaceful and stable Afghanistan means a peaceful and stable Pakistan, because it's the trouble in Afghanistan and along the Afghanistan-Pakistan border, which allows militancy to occur in Pakistan back home. The difference is the way that both countries want to accomplish that. When the U.S. intervened in Afghanistan back in 01, there was ongoing power struggle between the Pashtuns and the non-Pashtuns, and the U.S. effectively sealed that in the favor of the non-Pashtun forces, though they had a Pashtun president, Hamid Karzai. Pakistan would like to exert influence through these Pashtun groups. I think the threats of, Pashtun nationalism, as talked about in that article, is slightly overblown. I regularly visit the Khyber Pakhtunkhwa as part of my work, and I don't see that as being a major dividing force. I mean, for sure, there must be a few Pashtun nationalists out there, but it's not a major cleavage in the relationship.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you think it's more about India? I mean, to the extent that there is tension between Pakistan's and America's aims in Afghanistan, you think it's possibly more about Pakistan's fear that India is gaining influence through the Karzai government and would gain more through the kind of situation that America wants to leave behind there.
Historically, India have sided with the non-Pashtun forces, the Tajik and the Uzbek and whatnot, the Hazara, whereas Pakistan, because of its own Pashtun population, it's the largest Pashtun country in the world, has exerted influence through them, and so that's ultimately what Pakistan seeks to consolidate.
So if there were rapprochement between Pakistan and India, kind of an ending of their Cold War, that would do a lot to reduce tension.
Yeah,
the contradictions in Afghanistan.
Absolutely, but that's a very big if. It's something which India and Pakistan have been trying for a long, long time. Tensions certainly between India and Pakistan are cooling at this. I mean, they were at a high in 2008 following the Mumbai attacks, which were at least partly planned on Pakistani soil. The Pakistani government later admitted to that in the face of a lot of evidence. That's a very big if.
So long as that the India-Pakistan thing remains unresolved, there is fairly fundamental tension, it seems to me, between the current aims of the U.S. government in Afghanistan and Pakistan's kind of strategic goals. Then separate from that, there is the fact that the Pakistani government does have to pay some attention to popular sentiment in Pakistan, just as the U.S. government does, and there is a lot of public resentment in Pakistan against the alliance with the U.S. You mentioned one reason, which was America having been in general a fair weather friend. I gather, separate from that, there are ongoing things like the drone strikes. That was apparently a big theme in this rally of 100,000 people, right?
Absolutely.
Talk about that a little bit.
Okay, so as far as the drone strikes are concerned, Pakistani politicians are not being entirely genuine in their criticism, because it's the Pakistan government controlled by the Pakistani military, which allows those drone strikes to occur. And until recently, at least, those drones were taking off bases on Pakistani soil, which was all denied by all parties, but it came out in WikiLeaks, and there was satellite photography on Google Images which showed that even. This came out in 2009, or perhaps even earlier than that. Drone strikes do inflame public opinion, but my analysis of that is that they're used very cleverly by right-wing politicians and the army to manipulate public opinion, rather, because they are done with Pakistanis acceptance it's not happening behind Pakistan's back. Effectively, what is happening is the Pakistani establishment and right-wing politicians, while condemning drone strikes, actually condone their use in private. And the reason that they condemn those strikes as well is to foment a desirable level of anti-Americanism. What that enables them to do is to keep public opinion against the drone strikes, keep it against America, keep fomenting these pro-sovereignty feelings, our sovereignty is being violated, so that they can go back to America and say, look, this is how much the public hates you. What are you going to do to please us?
You're going to have to pay us more, given the amount of resistance. Popular resistance we face, so they stoke the popular resistance so they can demand more from the U.S.
It's a very disingenuous debate. Exactly. There is a legitimate question about the use of drones, no doubt. The CIA claims that they don't kill civilians. If you look at their numbers, it's practically close to zero in the last year, whereas if you look at independent tracking, it's many, many hundreds of civilian casualties. It's a legitimate question to be asked, and there are legal questions regarding whether it's legitimate to carry these things out. Is it in accordance with international law? But the government is not doing that. There's no level of honest debate. If there was an honest debate and the government were to say, come to the public and say, look, these are the civilian casualties, but we think it's useful because ABC, then at least we could sort of move forward.
Okay. And the government, actually supports, would you say, all of the drone strikes? I mean, the government actually approves of the targets of all of the drone strikes? I mean, in other words, it's being 100% disingenuous? Because I gather that the government kind of distinguishes between good Taliban and bad Taliban, right? I mean, in a certain sense. I mean, there are useful Taliban who can go into Afghanistan and help thwart what Pakistan sees as this convergence of American and Indian aims in, yes. in Afghanistan. But mm-hmm. then there are the bad Taliban who kind of stay in Pakistan and cause trouble for the, or a genuine threat to the government, I guess, right? And so the government would like to kill the bad Taliban and mobilize the good Taliban, as I understand it. And is it the case that really all of the drone strikes we hear about are, from the Pakistani government's point of view, useful because they really are all against the so-called bad Taliban?
That's a very legitimate point. I can't say with any certainty that all drone strikes are cleared or that intelligence is shared on all attacks. We simply don't know. We know that they are done on some. I mean, WikiLeaks proved that. There are embassy cables which very clearly show Prime Minister Gilani saying that we'll protest the drone strikes in Parliament, but, you know, we'll let the Americans do them.
Right.
For example, last week, the brother of a very prominent, one of these big Taliban, according to the Pakistanis, was killed in a drone strike along with four others. His name was Hazrat Umar. He was part of the Maldi Nazir group who aid the Haqqani network. And the Haqqani network are infamous for carrying out attacks against America and one of the most potent Taliban groups in southern Afghanistan. They helped carry out, or at least blamed for help carrying out the U.S. embassy bombing, I think back in, was that June now? And plus a major attack on NATO forces in September. So clearly, I mean, it's believed by analysts that Pakistan continues to support the Haqqani group because they exert some, they have a relationship with them, they can bring them to the table, and they believe that the Haqqani group might be a key for Pakistan to retain influence and influence the outcome of peace talks, which are coming up now in Istanbul, and going ahead from that.
And are you optimistic about those?
I really don't know. You know, I mean, it's not working out so far, but I can tell you that, you know, the relationship is going to continue. There is that coalition of interests, and the U.S. really can't afford to abandon Pakistan at this stage. They'll take a heavier line and move into Pakistani territory unilaterally. You've got to remember that this isn't Iraq. This isn't, as General Kayani, the chief of the armed forces, warned America recently, this isn't Iraq, this isn't Afghanistan. Pakistan's a nuclear-armed nation. So it is not really possible for the U.S. to stretch itself and think about carrying out, certainly they can carry out raids with small special ops forces of the nature of the kind which killed bin Laden. They did those before bin Laden, they've done them after, they'll continue to do that. Nothing really beyond that is really feasible. And for Pakistan needs this relationship as well, so they're going to do the bare minimum to stay on America's side. The reason why Pakistan needs this relationship is not necessarily because of the U.S. dollars coming in, because that, frankly, just makes up a very small portion of the economy. Pakistani economy is about $180 billion a year, and in terms of civilian aid coming into Pakistan, it should be about $1.5 billion a year, but that's coming in so slowly, so it's actually far less than a billion. And the military aid has recently been slashed by $800 million. So the amount of aid dollars aren't that much. But why Pakistan needs America is more for the multilateral support. Pakistan's very dependent on loans from the IMF and the World Bank. And to keep that relationship with them, Pakistan needs U.S. support. And plus, finally, I mean, if Pakistan were to break off its ties with America, it would effectively become a pariah state. And nobody wants to be a pariah state. Nobody wants to...
Well, that sounds like a lot of leverage, but apparently it has not been enough to keep at least elements within the Pakistani government from supporting those elements that are killing Americans, and lately have been doing so with particular frequency.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just makes... I mean, what would you do if you were... if you were America, let me actually frame that question a little. It seems to me this gets back to something that you were saying about, you know, Pakistan has nuclear weapons. America can't get too aggressive with Pakistan. you know, the irony of this whole thing is that America went into this to deal with Afghanistan, to punish Afghanistan or cleanse Afghanistan of terrorists or whatever. But it wound up, the war wound up destabilizing, as I understand it, a much more significant state, Pakistan, which is bigger, more developed, and has nuclear weapons, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that is the basic paradox that America faces. And what's funny is that the political pressure in America is still focused on Afghanistan, because that's what Obama has to answer for. Did you lose Afghanistan? Did you win in Afghanistan? Well, that's really small potatoes compared to the Pakistan issue. So I guess, in a way, the question I ask you, what would you do if you were America, could assume two forms. It could be, you know, what would you do if you were Obama and wanted to be seen as not losing in Afghanistan but getting out? There's that. But then there's the other question is, what is really in the long-term interest of America, given the tremendous significance of a nuclear-armed Pakistan, right? So those are kind of two separate questions. If you have an answer to either of them, I would love to hear it.
I think I can go ahead with the first part. I think the Pakistani military establishment, which I talked about earlier, is a danger not just to America, but a major danger to this country itself. I think it's been riding a very dangerous line. It's been treading a very dangerous line, because it's been betting all along that, hey, we can back the Haqqanis, and they're going to get us leverage on the table, and that's going to accomplish, that's going to give us more strategic depth, and we're going to get what we want in Afghanistan. But ultimately, that strategy might actually backfire, because, I mean, the Afghans are getting fed up, the Americans are getting fed up, and the Afghans are basically looking more to India as a consequence, and they, a couple of weeks ago, signed that strategic agreement with India. So by Pakistan, by creating this mess that they have created, they were hoping to achieve one thing, whereas they're achieving the exact opposite. That could end up being the case. If I was America, I would, you know, certainly have patience, and realize that, the people of Pakistan are suffering from this military establishment, as well, and try to do more to strengthen the civilian institutions whose instincts, particularly with this government, are far more sensible, far more liberal, far more progressive, who do not necessarily believe that radicalizing and arming militants is a good strategy, either internationally or domestically, and do all they can, basically, to help these weak civilian institutions. Now, Pakistan's civilian institutions are very divided. The government is running on a sort of shoestring coalition, which is barely held together. Sometimes a junior partner leaves. Sometimes it comes back in. They're really kind of almost a lame duck government now, with, you know, barely enough votes to pass legislation. So that they're not really helping their own cause in that sense. But, traditionally America has felt more at ease, particularly the Bush administration, with dealing with the generals, because they feel, you know, these are the guys who we need to talk to. These are the guys who are going to get things done for us. But it's really the civilian side of things which is going to help Pakistan help itself in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Clinton,
that is a very long run game, I would say. I mean, longer than the American political system generally has tolerance for.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
No, I think Obama administration realizes that, and I've attended some of Hillary Clinton's talks when she's been in Islamabad, and I think she has a fair kind of grasp on that, and she emphasizes that. And the optics of her visits with Pakistan are good in that sense as well. She very much sort of brings the civilian leadership front and center with her when she's giving her press conferences and she makes reference to her dealings with the civilians. And I think that's good, but I think we need more of that. And, I think, you know, the Americans should realize as well that it's not that Pakistani people don't hate the American people whatsoever. That's just not the case. It's more about the government. In fact, if you look at the educated middle class, who speak in English, in fact, I mean, the movies they watch, the music they listen to, it's all American. the colleges they aspire to send their kids to, it's America.
But isn't that in turn a source of the resentment of other people in Pakistan, the Western, this very Western influence?
I would say no. I don't think that's such a great source of resentment. I think more so is the American involvement in Afghanistan, which has destabilized Pakistan. With regards to destabilizing Pakistan, I mean, there are really two factors. One is that, okay, I think the Americans' involvement probably did push that destabilization to speed up, but at the same time, the Pakistani military establishment had trained these militants to fight out in other countries, and sort of, you know, these guys who had trained to fight in Kashmir, who had been trained to fight in Afghanistan, suddenly realized that they should, you know, start fighting in Pakistan. So they kind of, you know, created the mess partly themselves. I think it's both factors, and you can't. It's incorrect to simply blame America and say, well, America did this, therefore there's terrorism, which is what people like Imran Khan, the cricketer who you referred to, tend to say. They tend to simplify it. One of his messages all along has been, if you remove America from the region, terrorism in Pakistan will end within 90 days. I can end it. Which is really stupid. It's not going to happen. There are so many homegrown groups within Punjab who are responsible for the killings and for the bombings. It's not really linked to America anymore. And it never really was. I mean, the school curriculums which this country has been putting out since the 1970s have been very regressive, xenophobic, anti-West, anti-India, anti-Hindu. And when you lay that sort of groundwork over generations, it does radicalize people. So simply blaming America, yes, American involvement in Afghanistan brought the whole thing forward, but that was really a tinderbox waiting to explode at some stage anyway.
Okay, and do you think American withdrawal from Afghanistan, of course it depends on what form it assumed and what exactly happened in the wake, though,
yeah,
could relieve some of the pressure within Pakistan from radicals, if only because, I mean, some of them might go back to Afghanistan, right? I mean,
yeah.
Depending on how things played out, I mean, there could, if what people fear in Afghanistan happened, which is an actual Taliban takeover, that could conceivably have some upside in Pakistan, right? Because that would change their focus and get a lot of them out of Pakistan, right?
Yeah, potentially. It's hard to be predictive with these things. But I was on the Afghanistan-Pakistan border back in May in the Bajor tribal area. And what we noticed there was that the Americans had withdrawn from the other side of the border in Kunar. And that had led to an upsurge in cross-border violence. So, you know, that might continue in the short run.
In which direction? I mean, who was fighting with whom?
This is funny, because it was Pakistan-based Taliban, like from SWAT, who were driven out of Pakistan into Afghanistan. And then when the Americans left that side of the border, those same Taliban came back into Pakistan and started carrying out attacks, which they're doing right now. So that, when America withdraws, that sort of thing is likely to happen, those cross-border attacks from Afghanistan into Pakistan, at least in the short run. But if Afghanistan turns back into a haven for terrorism, then that could be bad for Pakistan. I mean, Pakistan has a stake in sort of at least keeping it peaceful and calm. Whether it's run by the Taliban, whether it's run by whoever, I think ultimately Pakistan does need to have a stable Afghanistan for its own stability.
So in this case, the reason that the Taliban, so with the American withdrawal, the Taliban was freer to attack Pakistan with the aim of doing what? What was their short-term goal?
Okay, so this group which I'm talking about was the Swat Taliban. Swat is a tourist area in Pakistan, in northern Pakistan. It's a very beautiful area. It's like it's not even on the border. It's in the settled areas of Pakistan. It's not in a tribal area. Now, the Taliban started to force their way in there in 2005. I mean, because of the general kind of extremism and using sort of long-standing grievances, they sort of muscled their way in and started announcing Islamic law and whatnot. The Pakistan army carried out operations to clear them out of the area between 2005 till 2009. They managed to clear them out. The remnants of those Taliban went across the border into Afghanistan and they hid out in the forests. When the Americans withdrew from that area earlier last year, back in 2010, in Kunar, they were able to be a bit more brazen and they started, you know, they started a pirate radio up again, which they used to have, and they started calling out their targets on their FM every night. So, you know, the people in that area live in dread whether they're going to be called out that night that, you know, so-and-so is a blasphemer, he's not a Muslim, he's an agent of America or the Pakistan government, mm-hmm. and he needs to die. So
they were Taliban who had been displaced from Pakistan into Afghanistan.
Right.
And wanted to regain influence. So so let me so just to kind of review the as I understand it, so America invaded Afghanistan and a lot of Taliban went into Pakistan and first of all I guess that's almost inherently destabilizing to have a bunch of homeless radicals in your country. But then beyond that,
not just Taliban, but Al Qaeda, you know, like militants from Central Asia and Arabs.
Which is not necessarily the same thing at all. There had been an alliance between the two, but that can vary on a case-by-case basis.
Plus, they're generally much more hardcore. The Taliban who ran in from Afghanistan were kind of the ISI still had relations with them and whatnot, but the Al Qaeda guys who came in, they're very dangerous. And when they radicalized the local population there, what they did was they created a Pakistani Taliban, and that Pakistani Taliban set about executing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of tribal elders. And those elders had held sway over that area for like hundreds of years, and they kept peace and order, and there was a whole family system whereby these elders would have their councils and they would hold the peace there. And these young radicals come in and they see these gray beards and they say, you're not Muslim enough, you're not doing enough, you're not killing the kafirs. And so they went and killed them. And that, you know, completely uprooted governance and stability which they had there.
Yeah. And so it was more the displacement of Al-Qaeda than the displacement of Taliban per se that caused the trouble in Pakistan. Yeah. And then, to complicate things, elements in the Pakistani government, I guess the military, the intelligence service, whatever, found it in their interests to mobilize, to form a kind of alliance with some of these radical elements, right? Or to empower some of them. And was that mainly so that they would go do their bidding in Afghanistan, or did they also want them to do some of their bidding within Pakistan?
No, that's entirely for outside of Pakistan. These groups
entirely,
that you talk about.
But some of them had
pre-existing relationships with, like Gulbuddin Hikmetyar's group, which they had, who was an Afghan warlord. So they had a pre-existing relationship with him, and the Haqqanis, they had a pre-existing relationship. So it's not that they suddenly, after 9/11, they decided that, you know, we need to build ties with these guys. These were guys who they had pre-existing relationships with, and they sort of renewed those ties. People who they could find who could be useful in certain instances.
Okay, so if you did, if Afghanistan ceased to seem a potential threat to Pakistan, then these elements in the Pakistani government would no longer have this ambivalence about kind of Taliban, Al-Qaeda, whoever in Pakistan. In other words, they would have no use for them whatsoever if the Afghanistan problem were solved.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
If they didn't fear Indian influence in Afghanistan or some other source of threat or instability from Afghanistan.
Yeah, absolutely. But the Indians, you know, they've been a lot smarter than the Pakistanis. The Pakistanis have been exporting terrorism, and, you know, Pakistanis are hated now in Afghanistan by a lot of people, not just within Kabul, but outside. Whereas India's been spending billions of dollars in development projects, in infrastructure, and not just that, they've been exporting soft power as well, in terms of, you know, when I was in Kabul in 2009, I think, 2009, at 9 o'clock, streets are empty, they were watching Indian soap operas. The Indians have been pretty smart about that.
Okay, so this is pretty much a mess, it sounds like. And your prescription, to the extent that you have one, is the U.S. should nourish the civilian infrastructure, broadly speaking. I mean the civil infrastructure, the non-military parts of the government, right. And the non-ISI, and I guess civil institutions broadly.
Yeah.
In Pakistan, that does seem like a long-term game. And I think American political pressure is surely going to get us pretty much out of Afghanistan, I think, before that strategy has a chance to really settle in. Mm. So I guess to some extent it's a question of what things wind up looking like in Afghanistan as America starts withdrawing troops significantly.
Sure, but I think that can really continue on a long-term basis. Beyond Afghanistan, the U.S. still has an interest in maintaining ties with Pakistan for other reasons. One of which is, offsetting Chinese influence in the region, and Pakistan's maintaining. Stability. With regards to terrorism, I think there's other reasons why Pakistan will remain important to the U.S.
Yeah, well, and they do have nuclear weapons. Not sure what form of Chinese influence in Pakistan we should find threatening. What would the Chinese do that would be a true threat to America?
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
I was just going to say we have these kind of instincts left over from the Cold War, that lead us to want to combat Chinese or sometimes Russian influence at every step. And I think it's important to repeatedly ask ourselves, is this particular form of Chinese influence really worth some kind of big fight? Yeah. Is it even inimical to American interests at all? It doesn't seem to me that for China to be entangled with Pakistan economically. Is inherently it. There might be competition between American commercial interests and Chinese commercial interests sometimes, but that's life in a globalized world. That happens everywhere all the time.
Sure.
But I don't know.
Yeah.
So, okay. I guess that's about it. We're running out of time. I had. I guess my final question would be, well, two quick ones. The Haqqani network we hear so much about. That is kind of sometimes described as the Taliban and sometimes described as an ally of the Taliban or of some of the Taliban. Is the situation just too messy to get a clear fix on? It's pretty fluid, right? What's Taliban and what isn't?
Okay, so it's not under... Yeah, you're kind of right, it's fluid. It's sort of a separate entity to the... it's sort of viewed as a separate entity to the Taliban controlled by the Mullah Omar and the so-called Fatah Shura. But at the same time, they often, in their own kind of the press releases that they hand out, they kind of swear fealty to Mullah Omar. So we kind of call them the Taliban faction. That's
right.
The kind of fudge that we kind of use.
Okay, and then the final question is, what can you talk a little about how the killing of Osama bin Laden played out in Pakistan in terms of Pakistani popular opinion?
Yeah, I think it was... Pakistani popular opinion was aghast, basically, that, U.S. helicopters could come so far inside Pakistani territory without Pakistan detecting it and, carrying out this unilateral raid. And a lot of the resentment which had been bubbling over at the army just came to the fore at that stage. Pakistan has a relatively free media, but, the army was always a red line where you couldn't go there. And after the May 2nd Osama bin Laden raid, that the floodgates sort of opened up. And there was a kind of window of opportunity then at that stage when, public opinion was so vehemently against the army. But, that sort of dwindled down now. They've announced a couple of commissions to investigate it. I don't really know what's going on with the commissions right now and when they're going to announce their verdicts. Definitely there was a lot of anger towards the army, and there was anger towards America as well for carrying out the raid by itself and violating Pakistan's airspace and sovereignty.
Okay. Issam, this has been really helpful from my point of view. I do think I understand things more clearly. I don't necessarily feel any more optimistic than I did.
Okay.
but if my pessimism is more firmly rooted, I guess that's a kind of progress.
I hope it was interesting enough.
What's that?
I hope it was interesting enough.
Oh, absolutely. And and I hope maybe you'll come back and talk to us again sometime.
Sure.
You know, I think I forgot to mention at the outset where people can find your work. You write for the Christian Science Monitor periodically, right?
And
that's maybe where Americans can most easily find your work. But you also write for a Pakistani magazine.
That's right, The Herald.
The Herald, okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And I hope we'll see you again.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
So I'm going to stop recording now. Okay, bye.